Shalom lachem.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. We are at our show, A New Life, a series of talks with the Rav, Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitza. Hello. And here we're talking about the Israeli society. We began this in our last discussion. We'd like to continue it today and in further discussions. And we defined a new outlook for the Israeli society. We'd like to turn the society in which we're living into one family. And we want to scrutinize, understand this vision, and today and every time we talk about it, we'll want to look at another facet of this vision and everything that makes us an Israeli society. We'd like to understand how we can progress and proceed into a better life, a new life. And the subject that we'd like to focus on today is from a place of connection between different people who came from different lands into one society, and what we've gone through here as a society, what we can learn from it, and how we can take it forward into a manifestation of the new vision. So, Nitza Mazoz, why don't you help us into the discussion? Right, the Israeli society is a very interesting blend of people, and we thought it would be good after we've defined our vision of being one family, we wanted to take a look at what happened to us, to take a look at ourselves, what we've gone through on the way, what processes we've gone through as an Israeli society. And perhaps I'd start with an excerpt from a book, which is called The Israeli Code by Gad Yair. And it goes like this. The Zionistic movement brought us back to the land of Israel because here, not in Auschwitz, is the place for the solution for the question of the Jews. The Zionistic movement was demanded to take in this great variety of Jews who came here and to bring them all together, to have all the people who came from such far places to come together and get a feeling of unity, of brotherhood. But despite this ideology that was meant to bring people close together, this failed. The mission failed, and even was failed because of people. And even though this project did not succeed, the Israeli project does correct us in a way, because it does push us together. It does make us hug and nudge each other, because we're brothers, even if it's only a pat on the back or words that are said externally. Something is happening. This Israeli being is putting us back together, and so that we would be able to feel this unity, so that we would feel that we've come home at last. So if we look at this definition, what is a melting pot? What did the Zionists try to do here, the Zionistic movement that called to all the Jews of all the different countries to come back home to Israel? This melting pot tried to take people from different cultures, from different places, from all kinds of different habits. And they tried to combine and to reduce all these original cultural attributes in order to create a unified culture society. Now, let's look at this melting pot. How do you see it? What is this idea of taking such a great variety and make something unified out of it? I see it an initial attempt to the international attempt to make the entire world into one family. Representatives arrived here of all the different nations of the world. On the one hand, they had this point of connection in them from the past, from their genes, from their ancient culture, because they suffer more than everyone else and they are pressured more than everyone else. And they feel themselves to be under pressure and mocked by everyone, meaning that they have a reason to escape everyone and to unite. This strengthens them and brings them close together, on the one hand. On the other hand, this variety of strange cultures foreign cultures, and we still see them today. And if we truly succeeded, other than being an example to the nations, we would be an example to others. We would show the world, look, we have Russians here, Yemenites, Moroccans, people who came from Europe, from Ethiopia, in India, and what not? Where not? People come here. We're all different by their status and education. Everything you can think of, with all kinds of reshimot, of histories and memoirs from the nations in which they resided for hundreds or maybe even thousands of years. The people who came from Georgia, they went to Georgia after the destruction of the first temple. And more such types, we would be able to show the world, look at what we've done. We've actually, in this small place, brought together and connected so many different nations. Because what separates us, as opposed to the nation we had before, is the different cultures. So actually, we were connecting all the different cultures, all the different approaches and levels. And we succeed at doing this. Now that we've done it in such a small part of the world, let's do it at a greater scale. We would be able, perhaps, we would attain the method and the experience of how to do this in the entire world. And so I see here in this coming closer between us, a process of preparation for the correction of the entire world. And so it's not a coincidence that we come here from all the different exiles to be together, because the world actually needs it. And therefore, we need to feel ourselves as messengers who had been sent from all these countries to this small place in order to do here this laboratory of true connection between all the different nations and countries and civilizations that exist today in the world. So we have here a completely different approach to what we're going to do. We are as messengers who are truly unified and special in that. There is no other nation that had dispersed to different nations and absorbed from them everything. We lived, and when we lived in those nations, we belonged to their cultures and educations and characters even more than they did themselves. And it's known that Jews who resided in all these places were the leaders in culture and education. It could be in Germany and Russia or in the Muslim countries or any other country. So really, we succeeded in absorbing everything from them. And therefore, here, if we now succeed at uniting into one nation as one family, we certainly have a basis and strength to present it to the entire world. And to say that this is the true example, that the entire world, according to this example, will also be able to head towards connection, because this connection, and whoever understands today already sees that it is the future of the world, that you cannot escape it, that nature with all its laws and the global crisis, it's all drawn towards it, And everyone, whether they want to or not, will have to come here to the same form. So I think that the people of Israel, not because of the future or the past, or some experience or messianic ideology, but we need to see, and there's a process that nature is playing with us in order to certainly bring us and show us as an example to the entire world. This is how I see the process that we need to go through. And out of this, I have approval, the authorization to continue in the process, because the world itself is in this ongoing crisis, and it is actually inviting this process of connection from us. This is what I feel. Now, when we look at this process, and we try to create a kind of unity and try to erase the special attributes of each culture and to create something Israeli and unified out of it, some one mix, I don't think it needs to look Israeli. What is Israeli? Israeli is unity. Israeli is connection. Israeli is mutual concessions. It's out of the duty that we have to the entire world to show an example to the world how it's possible to connect as one family, this is the form that is called Israel. All the rest is completely not Israeli. It's just things that we're being accused of or confused with. But I wouldn't take any definition of being Israeli that we see. It's not that rude humor that we see on television, and it's not dances, and not, it's nothing, not even religion. It's love thy friend as thyself. That is being Israeli. And also, this is the entire world, but for now, it only belongs to this small part on earth where we would like to actualize it. This is all I'd say that belongs to us. This is the culture, the education, the soul of Israel. In retrospect, when we look at what happened then in the first years that we were here, it seems as if a certain process was necessary, a kind of preparation, in order to succeed in this process of creating this melting pot. We weren't able to prepare ourselves when we lived in the nations of the world, but the process of nature went in such a way that we had the Holocaust and the pogroms, the pressures, all kinds of blows. All of this already took place in such a way that we arrived here, perhaps not in a way that we were prepared, but we knew that this was a safe haven. But aside from being a safe haven, aside from being pressured from the outside, this isn't enough. We need to also have a plan, a future form. That will be as a dream, a vision, a destiny for us. This is what we need. And this wasn't exactly clear to the nation. And also from the moment we arrived here, we didn't get any education for this. No, we were sunk in the division and separation and the mutual disrespect that we saw here. And it's not that we were washed by unity or by connection with the necessity of being connected and loving. It was felt very strongly, at least for me, when I went to the army. Immediately, 2 months after I came to Israel, already I worked in the army, and I felt there that there was some connection. There was also the Yom Kippur War and all kinds of such states that compelled us to connect and to feel yourself together with everyone because of the trouble. But again, it's just like the nuts in the sack, but still there was a feeling. As opposed to later, right after the war, I would go out to the street. That's all I had, work and my home, and I'd go to work and come home. I'd work very hard. But when I'd go out, there was a very great gap in the way that people treated each other, and just with disrespect, with this pride, this proud manliness, boastful manliness that was felt on the street. It was very unpleasant for me. I was happy to be in such a place as the army because the feeling of togetherness was stronger. This was 40 years ago. So it's a little different perhaps than today. Then people didn't lock their kid bags, their stuff. It was different. You knew that if you came to the dining hall and friends had not come there yet, then you'd leave them the good parts on the table. I remember how it's gradually, slowly began to disappear, this approach. It just passed away. From your memory, do you remember how it began to disappear? Were there reasons for it? Did anything influence it? I think there wasn't communication so much, so powerful. And afterwards it began to arrive, and then there were films and... In short, if we had a society that was maybe a little more closed off from the outer world, then maybe it would have been different. Because people used to started to go out, and economic blossom began. So I'd say that the great corruption began after the Six-Day War, when we began to feel that we were big, we were great, we are able to do anything, we are great heroes. And on the other hand, this war distanced from us many disasters and problems. But inside the nation, it created a great wound, a place of sickness that till today we feel still. It'd be interesting if you could expand on that, because I'm not sure everybody looks at it this way. It's not completely clear. I don't know. I think people are beginning to understand that pride, that empty condescendence, that's a tendency to think that we're stronger. We began to act this way between ourselves. We began to feel that we can do everything, we have nothing to fear. And then our ego broke out and it began to separate us. Each one began to feel that he's big. A great wound opened up, and it was an opening for the eruption of the ego in each and every one. I think so. I wasn't here then. I only arrived in the Yom Kippurim War, but I think that this is what happened. So really, we're looking at this process in which people came from all parts of the world. They tried to go through a certain process to create a collective. There was this idea of creating something more collective. And now you're describing a certain event that caused society to feel that it's strong, it doesn't need to be afraid. And then what happened to it? It began to... No, I think that also the fact that we were very influenced by Europe, by the United States, and America, we took their example for the structure of our state. Whatever we created was in wanting to be alike to them, and this is completely unfit for our nation. But the experts came from there, our representatives, and the members of Knesset were all from there. And so they used the same philosophy and approach towards life to build everything here. So I don't think that we were really in this process of connection ever. Even before the creation of the state, the foundation of the state, we need to not forget that much before the foundation of the State of Israel, there were many systems here of economy and education and supplies. And the state that was founded, it was weak in itself, the political system. But before it, there were already there were the Haredi, the Orthodox sector, already had all kinds of systems and education for all kinds of different levels of society and parts of the nation. This also existed. And the army also was there, but it wasn't unified. There was the Etzel and Lehi and all those different types of security forces. So then I don't think that the foundation of the state is the point from which a new thing began. But much before that, even tens, dozens of years before that, all of this system began to be built. And with the foundation of the state, it only got stronger. I understand that the most important thing was to give everyone, supply everyone with food and clothing, to enable people to build homes and so on. But still, the ideology, the education, it wouldn't see us all as one family. They'd want to allow each person to develop, each one with their own culture. We didn't think enough about how to connect above the differences, above the cultures, above the mentalities. I don't know. I think that until 10 or 15 years ago, now it's beginning to be a little more vague. But until then, there was a very great distance between Ashkenazi and Sephardi Jews, also between them inside these sectors. It was as if somebody wanted to separate people on purpose in order to rule, in order to have power. And this disaster continued until these days. We see that even today we have parties, political parties. Actually, it's possible that because of this attempt to erase and make these differences vague, that they erupted in even worse ways. Because you said that we were not smart enough to try and make this unity above the cultures, but we tried to erase them, to unify them by making the differences vaguer. So is it possible that this attempt created this feeling? Look, I came from Russia, and there was a very... There was a great lie, and we were taught at school and afterwards in all of these different systems of education that we are all equal, that there is no greater or smaller, nobody who is green or yellow or black or I don't know what. And we're all completely equal. It was a very varied society. There were 16 different countries inside it. And this worked. There wasn't disrespect. There wasn't distance. But the opposite. It was a whole political plan. I know that when I went to the university, then the people, the children that came, people who came from all the countries around Russia itself, Tajikistan, Kavkaz, Moldova, all these countries, they helped them be accepted. They wanted to unify, to connect. This was felt in all. There was an aimed policy to unity. It was aimed at unity because it was known that if inside the country you'd let everyone do whatever they wanted according to whatever they wanted and according to any language, then the whole federation wouldn't last. And they maintained this very vehemently. So then when I came here, it was very... I didn't see all these things very as good. First of all, on TV, there were just two channels all in all. But either you had news, all kinds of talks, a lot of talks, and the jokes was where each one would laugh at his neighbor that he didn't have the same color and didn't have the same mentality and his Hebrew wasn't that good and such things that... I didn't imagine I would find here in Israel before I came here. Because even if these things are humoristic, it's an action and it leaves its mark. People absorb it. And afterwards, they give it onwards to all the different levels of connection. Now, as you were talking, I was reminded that my mother came to Israel with her family at the age of 3. They came from Yemen. And I remember that my uncles told me, her brothers, that when she came to school a year or two afterwards, when she was already here in Israel, one day she came home from school, and she said that the teacher changed her name. She had a name, and the teacher decided that her name wasn't appropriate for the state of Israel, and she gave her a new one. And I remember my feeling as a child that whenever my uncles or my mother's family, they had this habit that they'd call her in her original name, and afterwards all the rest of the people already called her by her new name. So why was I reminded by this? I even remember that on her tombstone, on her gravestone, we wrote her first name and also the name that the teacher at school gave her. So I'm reminded that maybe because I'm younger, I don't have a recollection of this experience. I just know from the stories. I'm a Yemenite, so I know that from the stories they said that when people came from Yemen, they came with their the long hairs in which people cut in order to make everyone the same. So for me, these are historical stories. It's not from the days that I grew up here. And still, in this discussion about a melting pot, a very great question arises of taking different people, putting them all together in this one pot, and having them and create one stew out of them. And on the way, you have to cut their wings and change them to make it all work. Well, that's the problem. That's the problem, because it's the opposite. If you raise and grow the love and connection and concessions and consideration between people. It's just like in a family. You want them to be as different as possible, like flowers in a bouquet. You can't just have red. You want to have white and blue and red and green. This is what gives you this multitude gives you the richness. And therefore, the approach, of course, is not right. You leave each one as he is. You don't suppress anything, not the way he sees the world or anything else. You only treat it with love. You only sow seeds of connection and love. How each person perceives, in what way does he understand, and at what pace? How is it expressed in him today, tomorrow, towards this person more or less? It's none of your business. Don't meddle in it. This new integral education, this arvut, mutual guarantee, connection, it is just the example for it is the family. How many kids do you have? 4. Completely different, right? Completely. Do you treat each one the same? It's impossible. They're all different. Exactly. So your love, and also aside from that, the education that you give them with certain limitations, where you want to give them a direction for each one of them to develop himself, but in the best way, to open him up. So you can't say that everyone should be the same. That's it. You can't do it. I also saw this with my brother and I. We are 2. He went in a completely different direction. He was interested in business and nothing else. And he's also successful at it, and he succeeded in Russia, and also in Israel, also in Canada. He went through a number of countries. Now he's in America. He succeeds at everything. That's his field. That's him. And I'm completely far away from that. I'm the opposite from that. I wanted science, knowledge of life, of nature, something. That's all I was interested in ever. So imagine if my parents would pressure us to be something in the middle between those two. I don't understand how. My oldest daughter, she wanted, from the moment she was born, she wanted biology. I don't even know where she heard this word. Nothing helped. That's all she wanted. She went through Bet Yaakov and the army and everything. She went to university, to the laboratory, and that says she's happy with her life. And I didn't do anything about it. All I did was give her the opportunity to accomplish what she wanted, and that is called educating the youth in accordance to his nature. Give him what he needs. Have him reach what he wants in life. So now let's go back to the discussion about the Israeli society. It's the same. There is no suppression in spirituality. Love and connection is spirituality, because by that we attain the spirit of life. I can't attain the spirit of life on my own. We only attain this in the connection between us. Here, between us, we begin to feel that there is a special new power. This is called the family. Family is not me and you and him. The family is what we create between us. And these mutual forces of connection, of mutuality, of consideration and mutual help and so on. By that, each person needs to be himself. And I need to accept each one with his good points and bad points, just like I accept all the children. You see that this is the person. What can you do? Each one has his weaknesses and strengths and special aspects to him. Therefore, the integral education only speaks of one thing. Let us discover between us in a practical way, that connection brings us the feeling of life. it's worthwhile for us. I only speak in a simple egoistic way. And so we should talk less because each one accepts these words differently. We should give less knowledge, let's say, because most of the nation doesn't understand it and they don't need it.
But
people who want it will be able to delve into it. Thank God we have a lot of materials. But mostly we should do all kinds of activities, experiential activities, to help a person feel and understand that this is the good form. Bring me a person who lives in an orphanage and bring him to a family to live there. How many impressions will he feel? The warmth, the feelings that he will get if they put him in the family and treat him just the same as everybody else. What this child will feel as opposed to the orphanage. So what is this symbolic of? It's symbolic of how we don't even feel what it means to be inside a family. We're just like in an orphanage. What do people there do? They kill each other, struggling with each other, and as opposed to that, in a good family, where they're educated as much as possible, still they feel that there's a father and mother, and they help each other, and they're brothers and sisters. You're amongst people who, whatever you do, there are those that maybe you do not get along with so much, not well enough. But you need everyone. For you, that is the concept of family. It's the place where you live as Adam, as a man, as a human. It's where you stabilize the warmth that gives you the feeling of life. The fact that we don't give such an education. We see that today people don't want to build families. What for? What did I receive in my family? What did I see? Arguments, struggles, each one pushes the other, uses the other. What do I need that for? I have my apartment, my microwave, my fridge, my food from the supermarket. That's it. What do I need more than that? Children. What do I need children for? Just to shout at them all the time, for them to disrespect me and take my money. I'll live for myself. You understand? The lack of familyhood, the concept of family, of connection, the lack of this feeling of connection, that it's in connection that I feel my life, this lack destroys our families that don't want to be married, and they even destroy the families. Even if they do want to be in a family, we're not able to build them. We're not able to build our societies and our states, and also our workplaces. In each place, we have relationships that are not right. And this influences everyone. And we don't think that it influences the economy, but of course it does. The relationships between us, it influences things directly. The economy, the poverty, the gaps between us, all of it. The only solution is to change man, to change people, of course. It's clear. I'd like to go back to the process for a moment. I think understanding the process is very important, because once you understand what you're going through, it's easier for you to accept the point you're at today. So we started from this point where we looked at the desire to create this unified melting pot. This was the Zionistic dream that talked about the collective and all these values. And in this dream, there are a lot of disagreements from the start, left, right, Mapai on the one hand, Etzel and all the different sectors, and this was worse than what we had from those who hate us from the outside, our enemies. And then when we look at what happens in the 70s and 80s, we began to to forget about this vision that we had and to replace the values of collectiveness with the American dream, individualistic dreams, fulfilling oneself. There was a kind of transition, maybe even a disappointment from that attempt to create something unified of ourselves. We didn't really know how, so suddenly we didn't correct Altalena. We didn't correct the past. We didn't find the middle way, the forgiveness, the mutual forgiveness inside the nation. We didn't scrutinize ourselves, our hearts, with all that we had in our short history in the last 100 years. We began the state on the left foot. When we look at the Zionistic dream, he also defined it this way. It was to build a home for the Jewish people. And a home is the walls, but you're already talking about the family, which is what resides inside the walls. So maybe it was this process that began with creating this space, this house, like you said, like a laboratory, a place where we can undergo a process. And inside this process, we went through stations. And the station that we've reached, perhaps today, after all this transition from the Zionistic dream to the American dream, we've reached, well, thank God that the American dream was broken in America and here. Right, and we can look at the state we are in now in society. There's a kind of process that we see in the last 2 or 3 years, especially with the young generations that are expressing kind of disgust, and they're saying, enough, I've had enough, not this or that dream. There's a kind of shattering of our dreams. And this is exactly the place where we can build this new dream, but this time with the hope of actually fulfilling it. So let's look at our Israeli society today. What does it look like? What's in it? It's helpless. It's experiencing helplessness, lack of direction, lack of certainty, despaired. Of course, the macho manliness is still there on the outside. We can see it and hear it. There are no great leaders. There are no wise people, wise men. Everything has lost its value. And I'm not saying that this is for the worse. Maybe this is the acknowledgement of evil, that it was there before, but we didn't acknowledge it. And the time is right for change. We mustn't wait, because otherwise the crisis will have us suffer a few times more than the rest of the world. What can I say? We need to work with what we have. I don't think that we need to go through so much criticism of what we have. The society is prepared for changes. It understands what is happening in the world. It's confused and understands that it's confused. This is good material to begin to make changes. With everything we've gone through, I think that we can admit that we've gone through them correctly in order to reach this desperation. So, yes, we've reached it. Now the question is, how do we use what we have in society in order to reach this correct change? I think that as much as the more of this European and American dream shatter, it would be easier to approach people from Israel and to begin to talk to them about the values of the nation Because there's no one else to accept as an example. There is no one in the world that is worthy of this example. So then this situation is good. The problem is that we have no one to turn to so much from the people that we maybe would be interested in locating in the Israeli society in order to maybe immediately they'd be able to understand us, to identify with this idea. Even though there are such people, they understand and are willing to do this. They're able to participate. But the great people, if they would say their word, then the nation would follow them, or great organizations. I don't identify such people or bodies. I wanted to share with you a thought that I had about a month ago, I think. I participated in a kind of Friday meal with friends, with some families. And we sat together, and suddenly on the table there were different breads, and we prayed, we blessed. And then somebody told me, this is a chalat kubane. Chala, I know, and kubane, I know. Kubane, so those who don't know, it's a Yemenite dish. And now they told me, this is a chalat kubane, a type of chala. And next to it, I see a package of red and green shug. And they said, this is a chalat kubane. So I asked them, who brought this? So it was a couple of friends who said that they buy this in Herzliya. There's somebody who makes it there. Now, for 38 years, Yemenite, I've been eating kubane every Saturday. I've never seen such a thing. So immediately I tasted it, and then I said, look at this. Look how everything happens. I meet this melting pot, a kind of creature that was born here in Israel. It has nothing to do with the kubane from Yemen that I know, but there are some things that remind you of it, but if you told me, I wouldn't know it. If you didn't tell me, I wouldn't know it. There's a kind of mix here where somebody took something from here, something from there, and now there's a kind of a mixture of all kinds of components. And the question is, how from all these tastes that were mixed and confused, we take nothing. All we need to do is add love, and it organizes everything. What should I know about the? Why should I know about the different tastes and dishes? In my approach towards education, I don't need to study any of this. The Yemenite culture, Russian mentality, Ethiopian approach, I don't need it. Educate the youth according to his character, meaning give him the education, and he will, according to his ways, will give the color, will give the shade, will give his own character to it. But if he will have this approach of love and unity and connection, he'll already know how to express this love. So one will take the Yemenite dance, and the other will take some different music, and another person will take a special dish. It's not important anymore. It's not important. When a young child gives you his toy, you understand that he loves you, that he's willing to share with you his most important thing, his pacifier. It's the same thing. It's an expression. The most important thing is that you understand that he understands that he expresses his approach, his feeling. How do all the different tastes live together? That's the question. It's not a problem. I have no problem with that. What is it important? Today there are wars. Through them, I receive the feeling of love. I used to run a business. I had a cleaner lady who was from Yemen. and she'd bring me all of her different dishes. You understand? Of course. They'd invite me, and I couldn't say no, not just to parties, to feasts, but to all kinds of events and to marriage, weddings. And at first I'd sit there and listen to a Yemenite song for 20 minutes until you warm up. You shouldn't even sit. I bought a house in a Yemenite neighborhood. I used to live there. I was very comfortable. I felt very good. I felt a very a national feeling, like of the people, and so I didn't feel far from them. I don't think we should even regard these things. Only love, that's all we need. And each one will express it in accordance to his spirit and character. So you should bring your kubane, and the other person will bring his gefilte fish, and another person will bring another thing. So what? It's not important. The most important thing is that we will sit together as brothers. This is exactly the question. It's as if also it will disappear gradually, all these things. They won't we won't keep them. Finally, through the connection between us, we will receive something that will be accepted by everyone. The children will replace us. The grandchildren will replace us. We don't need to think about these external expressions. I think today, I look today after these 65 years that this state has existed, and if I look at the last elections that we had, it's worse than before. Yes, I see that this separation is getting even worse all the time. So if it's not between different sectors, then we find different things to fight over. I feel as an Israeli, these two forces, you mustn't go after the politicians and all the different leaders, because their direction is to separate and to rule, to divide and rule. I can't rule all the country, but at least I will rule my sector, my part. This part or that part, doesn't matter. Those who are at the top, they are interested in dividing everyone. They're interested in reaching a state where no one will be connected to the other. This is clear. This is a Roman approach. Divide and conquer. Divide and conquer. Why? Because you have no other choice. Because in order to conquer and rule, you have to separate people. Otherwise, they'd be against you. You need to stir conflicts between them, and then you rule both of them, and you're in the middle while they beat each other, they weaken each other, and you're in the middle as the ruler, sitting up high. You don't see this in the government? You don't see it in the parliament? From time to time, there are more ministers. You need to divide all the chairs. There are more parties. These days, each person can open a party, and also inside the parties, there is a separation. I'm telling you, we will soon reach a state. If you have 120 members of parliament, you'll have 120 parties. If there wasn't that percentage that you needed to have in order to get in, each of them would have their own party. All right, so let's summarize with this question about the melting pot. From what's been created here, there is a multitude of differences, and I feel you can either take this multitude in one direction or the other. You can take it to the direction where you make the best salad in the world, where all the tastes enrich the others, and you have the greatest celebration of colors and tastes. This is to the good direction. And unfortunately, we many times see that we take it to the bad direction of separation, of hatred, of educating towards hatred, of educating towards segregation. How do you see that we can use this vision and take the benefits of the multitudes in order to create the best, most highest quality thing in the world? You don't make salads with your mind, and don't let anybody else do it either. Let these things evolve naturally. Just do one thing, keep one thing. Each and every moment, add connection. In what way, it doesn't matter. The most important thing is to have more and more connection all the time, more and more and more. This is the only parameter. This is a salad. We need pepper. He doesn't like it. You do like it. You like salt. I don't like salt. And schug and whatever. Forget about that. This doesn't belong to you. Let nature do what it needs to do. All you need to do is work on the love. This is the only place that you have free choice and connection between people. Don't be smart about any of the other stuff. The wisdom will come after the acts that will cause love. And then you will understand what it's for and what it brings you to. You can't be smart about anything except increasing love. This is what's given to us from nature. We need to understand that. And by doing connection, by that, you come to the heart of nature itself, because this is the one force that runs all of nature, and by that you are also operating in this power of connection. And if we try to translate the word connection in a few words, what does it mean to accept the other? What does it mean? Well, okay, so we need to already study this, and the most important thing is to have people experience it and understand it from experience. But actually, all of the rest of the things we do are an illusion. And instead of, you know, they only do make things worse, because the only thing we need to do is bring everyone to this connection. So now the question is, in accordance to what actions and some accompanying explanations can we bring the nation the same pack of connection, this package? Before that, if we could take a step back for a minute, you talk about connection a lot. It's very dominant. You mention this a lot. And we hear a lot of questions. People don't really understand what this word, they don't understand what it means. What do you mean by connection? This world is not something we use often. We don't know what it is. And even if we are, it's not in the way that I mean. I mean in the word connection that through specific actions, which is sitting together and dancing and singing and eating together and talking. And most importantly, it's talking to each other in such a round way. And more than that, it's these workshops that we can hold. By that, we reach a state in which we begin to understand each other, to feel each other. Each one is willing to see others as greater than him and to respect them and succumbs to the others. And he does all kinds of acts in order to make a place within himself for the others. Each one wants to enter the others, to seek this place there for himself. How can I live within you? That I'll be inside your heart and mind. How can I begin to feel reality through you? through your vessels of perception, and how can you do this in me, through me? And I'm willing to open myself up for you. Please know me better. Come inside me. See how I see the world, and I want to know how you see the world. By that, we are integrated with each other. We are integrated by each other, and from this mutual connection, we bring ourselves to connection. When I am integrated in you and you are integrated in me, a common space is created, which is called connection or soul. Unfortunately, our time is up. We're very thankful, Rav Lyman, to you, and thank you, Nitzan Mazoz. Thank you, our viewers, for being with us. And there is a great hope for the Israeli society that it will be powerful and warm and connected with soul. Until next time, all the best and goodbye.